It's weird because Jesse Clegg and we've moved in the same circles for a little while, and I think we kind of met each other backstage at a couple of gigs back in the old days, but we've never really even, I don't think, had a conversation. And I've always wanted to meet him, you know, and he bears the great Clegg name, and you know, always just admired how he moves and how he just acts like a global artist and spends a lot of time in other countries meeting other writers. Just a guy, and you'll see on this particular chat, first of all, he's a whiskey fan, so he's a great dude anyway. But just the passion for the music, the passion for this, it's just pure music. That's all there is to him. Even like when I start trying to talk about anything except for music, it was, you know, we don't really get anywhere. We got into obviously some Johnny Clegg stories as well, really beautiful stuff there. And for me, you know, even though, I mean, Johnny was such a legend, I also wanted to try and sort of spend some time just talking about what it's like to lose a dad, because I'd been thinking about the idea that you lose an icon who is your father. You've got like a double whammy there. You have to deal with your own thing as well. So we kind of got into that as well, I think. We speak about COVID and how he writes songs and TikTok and a whole lot of other things. But really, I just feel honored that I got to spend an hour. You know, you go through this industry seeing people running past you, but very seldom is that you actually get to sit and have this kind of deep conversation. And so it's such a great privilege for me to be sitting and having a little whiskey with Jesse Clegg. Jesse, hello and welcome.
Thank you, man. Great to be here.
Yeah, lovely to, I don't know. It's very strange. Let's start with the important stuff. What you got going on over there?
Well, I just have some whiskey, man. Whiskey, ice and water.
What whiskey are you drinking?
Jameson, man. Just classic.
Are you a Jameson man through and through?
I am. I did a whole bunch of tours where I was drinking. Cheers, man. What a
cheers,
legend.
Cheers.
Great to be here, man. I did a lot of tours where everyone was drinking brandy and Coke, and I found like I would get home from the tour of extremely overweight. I've switched to Jameson and water.
Yeah, as you get older, that the whiskey is like important. It's important to keep your finger, right?
Well, yeah, you got to do something.
Dude, I don't know that it's weird. We know a lot of the same people, but I don't, and I actually remember we used to, back in the early cassette days, there were some festivals and stuff we were playing together. I don't know that we've ever really said hello to each other more than three times ever, potentially.
I know. It's strange.
It's very weird.
We've been in the same circles, but we haven't actually crossed paths, man. Well, it's great to finally get to talk to you, man.
I'm so honored that you're here. And what's interesting is that, and I'm giving you a heads up, is that the last question I always ask on these is to recommend someone else you think would be a great guest with great stories. And you've come up a few times. I think Ross from Prime Circle threw it out there. And yeah, see, so you got good people out there. So it's taken me a while to get to you, but I'm really, really happy you're here. So cheers.
Man. Cheers, man. Thank you. Well, great to be here.
I know this, like, belatedly condolences on the passing. I mean, it's nearly 2 years. And the one thing, and not that you're, not because of your father who he was, but I also, like, the passing of your father is something you never get over. And the one thing I do remember very clearly, I mean, it's been a few years now, is that, like, for 6 months or three or four or five, 6 months, everyone's, like, checking on you. Then they forget to check on you after a while. And the pain, super raw, particularly around this kind of time. How are you doing?
I think you know, it's been a journey, man. I think because, you know, in a way we knew it was coming. You know, he it was a very slow decline, and he was so strong and so incredibly with such a vitality, man. I mean, he was touring all the way through his chemo, and he was so so active in his final years. But when things started to decline, you know, we were able to, I think, mentally prepare a little bit, because we had known that this was a serious situation. And when it happened, it was shocking, man. And it was something that I felt unprepared for, even though we'd known. But I think as time passes, you start to find a way to access those memories and those moments that you share without that sadness and without that sorrow, and kind of rediscover the person. And I think it's really important to get to that point, because otherwise you really do lose that person. Mm. You know, if you only experience sadness and the heartbreak, then it's hard to revisit those memories. And I think that what's been a very healthy process is, you know, me and my family have started to listen to his music again and share memories and share photos and videos. And, you know, we can finally look back, and it's a very happy experience.
Oh, amazing.
So I think that's a really, that's a big milestone for us. And it's amazing how time slowly, you know, enables you to find perspective and to just distance yourself from certain types of emotions. So I feel like me and my family have made good progress, man. And, you know, we are flying the flag, and there's a lot of really exciting projects around my dad's music and his legacy and everything. So there's lots coming this year, which we're very excited about. But on an emotional level, I feel like we're finding our way, man.
I'm really happy to hear that. And you have a kid. When did you have a kid? Was that last year?
Yeah, she's 11 months. So exactly 11 months ago.
Because I tell you this, like, the fact that your dad never get to meet your kid, because that's my big thing on my life, is that I never stop thinking about that. That's a tough one.
Mm. It's very tough, man. It's very tough. That is a really painful one. It's a terrible. It's an opportunity lost that, you know, you can't really comprehend. Mm. But, you know, I've taken it upon myself to make sure she knows who Gramps is. You know, play her music for her all the time.
Beautiful.
And we play her the music videos, and she's, you know, she knows my dad's old band, and Sipo has met her and held her, and, you know, she's all the family and friends and the music and the legacy, she's steeped in it. So she will know her grandfather one way or another.
Amazing, man. And yeah, and last question on this subject. I mean, I was just in my mind, so I hope this isn't like this is not planned, this part, but I just wanted to ask you, like, do you feel, and I'm just sensing from what you're saying, you know, watching from afar, because I never met you. One thing that was really clear about you is that you grew up with the Clegg name, and you've been extremely, well, I remember from the early days, like, you want to stand on your own two feet. You were like sort of wanting to make sure it was Jesse Clegg. It wasn't sort of under this other umbrella. Do you feel now like a shift in sort of a combination or a gravitation, or is it still something that's just two different paths?
Yeah, I do feel a shift. I think that part of that shift was, you know, me sort of finding my own sort of audience and my own artistic identity, and that took time. I mean, you know how it is, man. Even without someone in the family, it takes time to find your artistic journey and your voice and your, you know, your place in music. I think that's something that for a lot of artists, it's a journey, and you never really arrive. It's just something that you constantly evolve. I think that, you know, there was a long period where me and my dad never really did anything together musically, and that was the choice by me. And then when his final journey tour was announced, and we suddenly realized that our time was limited, I think that there was a very important, like, milestone that I reached, where I was like, you know what, this is bigger than me. It's bigger than my career. It's bigger than whatever insecurities I have. I want to connect with my dad through music. This is something that I've always wanted, and I may never get the chance. So now's the time. And it was a beautiful experience, man. We toured the world. We did 50 shows in three different continents. We went into studio, and I was writing with him for the first time, and we wrote some really great songs together. And we just went on this epic road trip around the world, man. I mean, it was just such a wonderful bonding experience for us to do that. And I feel really grateful that we got to have that experience. And I think when he passed, it was no longer a feeling of like, I need to define myself, you know, against something. It was more like, this is me. This is my family. This is something that is that I'm honored to be a part of, and it's something that I feel an extension of. Yeah. So I think that I've grown up in that way, you know, it's been strange, you know. Like I think when I started, I didn't really know how to be or what people thought of me, and you know, it's weird when you coming, you know, out of a famous sort of family and people have expectations. I think people thought I was going to be like a world music kind of Afro pop guy, and I did my own thing, and so yeah, I think it just took time for me to feel comfortable.
Amazing. Well, cheers to you. So the next thing that, you know, you are part of this sort of strange, not the right word, elite kind of songwriters club. You know, you've got like the bands and the singer songwriters that are out there, and you see them, and then you've got this group of guys who really, you know, and I this is what I've really respected about you and your career and the way that you've been working, is that like you really, songwriting is your sort of real craft, and you collaborate globally, and you've made connections all around the world, like working with songwriters, which is kind of the invisible part of the music industry. How did you start to sort of grow those wings and get into those sorts of circles?
Well, thank you, man. I really appreciate that. And I mean, you've written some killer ones as well, man. I loved your band. Just so you know, I was a big fan, man.
Oh wow, thanks.
I think that, you know, for me, coming to music from the beginning, for me, my love was songwriting. You know, I never considered myself a performer or a front man or any of that stuff. Like, I loved the experience of songwriting and the, you know, the means of expression. That was really how I came to music. I was never really a guy who was like in all the bands and like performing and jamming. I was like more the guy like sitting at home with my acoustic guitar, like writing songs and trying ideas and trying to find interesting chords and melodies. And, you know, I was never like the band guy. And I think over the years, you know, I've learned to play to my strengths, and I've only enjoyed songwriting even more. You know, it's something that I feel very grateful to be able to do as a job, because I really enjoy it. And it's, as you know, man, it's like infinitely difficult. And when it works, it's like one of the best feelings in the world. And so, yeah, over the years, man, I've just been writing. I mean, I've done my first album I did here, and I basically wrote and performed the entire album. The second album, I wrote all the demos and stuff in studio, just basically me and an engineer. And then it got the label, David Gresham Records, sent the album to some of their contacts, and it fell into the hands of David Bottrell, who's a Canadian producer who had done some brilliant albums, Muse, Origin of Symmetry, all the Tool albums from the 90s, Stained, Silverchair, you know, all these like legendary like rock acts, but still like singer-songwriters, you know, like not like really great songwriters as well. And so I ended up doing my second album in Toronto, spent 6-7 months there working with Dave. And it was a very kind of guerrilla vibe. It wasn't Hollywood at all. I mean, he was like kind of between projects, and I was an indie artist, and he heard my demos and he liked them, and we kind of did it in his home studio. It was a wonderful experience, man. It was really awesome to just get into his world in such an intense way.
And was that largely backed by Gresham? I mean, who can go live in Toronto for 6 months and just write a second album?
I had some family friends there, and I lived there with them, and ended up meeting my partner, I've been with her for 11 years. It was her parents, and I ended up meeting her in Canada, and she came back to life. So this cool. trip was quite important for a lot of reasons.
Wow.
Yeah, and he did us a really good deal. I mean, I don't think we could have afforded him if he didn't love the music. Mm. And so, yeah, I went and did that. My third album, I came back to South Africa, and I worked with Denham Harding and Ewald van Rensburg, which I know you know those guys. Mm. Also legendary musicians, and had a great experience. Very transitional album for me, moving into a new space. And in the last few years, I've been spending a lot of time in LA, writing music for myself and for other projects, and just really honing my writing skill. You know, I think that there's something quite amazing about LA in that there really is a circuit of songwriters. You know, there's songwriting is an industry there. You know, there's a huge amount of songwriters that are writing great.
You must know SJ, right?
Yeah, I actually haven't met her in LA. She reaches out to me, and I haven't had time to hook up with her yet. But we've every time I go down, she's like, "Okay, let's do it," and I'm like, "All right, let's try." And it just never quite worked out. But I do know her. Yeah,
right.
Cool. But it's a great experience, man. I've been really enjoying it. And the last 3-4 singles I wrote and recorded in LA over there. So. You know, it's nice to be out of my comfort zone. It's nice to be working with songwriters who I really respect and who I think can push me and challenge me and expand my horizons. So, yeah, it's really just trying to keep pushing, man.
And how do you work? Like, if you're in a group or when you're collaborating with other songwriters, what do you find hard and what do you find easy? Is it just like an easy process, or you struggle with it, or what do you wrestle with?
Look, I think for me, it was very hard for me to transition to writing with other people. You know, I really enjoyed just sitting with my acoustic guitar and writing. I think that what was hard for me was just letting go of the process a little bit, like being a little bit more open to seeing where a song can lead. Like, I feel like I know exactly where the song needs to go. Like, the moment I have an idea, like the concept is fully formed a lot of the time, or I have a general kind of outline.
And can I just, sorry to interrupt you. I just want to, did that come from, do you think, being in South Africa? Like, the one thing about being an artist in South Africa, particularly you, who when you started, you came out very strong, like you had this identity. One of the things that being in South Africa forces you to do is be everything. You know, you gotta be the manager, be the band, be the producer, be the songwriter, be all that stuff. And the rest of the world doesn't operate like that. It's way more collaborative. So often we learn locally to be like super intensely everything.
Yeah, I agree, man. I think that there's really guys who have specialized over there. You know, there's like there's the guy who makes like
bridges,
the bridge. Yeah. And there's like the guy who comes with the keyboard. He's just got great chord progressions, you know, and there's that guy. So look, I think that it's been a great training because we've as South African songwriters, I think, especially when I was kind of starting out, I didn't find there was like a lot of collaboration happening in general for artists. Like, I feel like everyone was kind of on their own tip. It's actually improved quite a lot. So I don't know if you've experienced that, but I think that there's a lot more of a welcoming vibe among South African artists. I think at one point everyone was kind of just focusing on their own thing, you know?
Right.
And so, yeah, I think that being in LA was really an eye opener in terms of just that collaborative process, how quickly and easily you can collaborate with songwriters, how normal that is. You know, it's absolutely normal. It's not an unusual thing. In fact, almost every song on the radio right now has multiple different songwriters, and that person could just be adding, you know, a reverb to your voice. But he was in the room in the moment, and he just gave an energy. And, you know, there's something about that chemistry that is just, yeah, you don't know why the song happened the way it did. But I really enjoyed it, man, and it's given me a lot of new material and stuff that's, I think, pushing my sound into new places, which is really nice. Because I don't have a band who can, you know, I don't have any set band members that I can vibe off of. I just have to find my own thing that challenges me and that pushes my own boundaries. So, yeah, it's kind of like I have to put myself into strange situations to get inspired.
Weird question is, rather than ask you about lockdown, what I want to ask you is about what you might have learned through that weird process that what new opportunities are you finding with what maybe how COVID and the lockdown things have changed how you had to work and what you're doing. Now, like, there's a little bit of light at the end of the tunnel. I mean, I'm personally finding there's like lots of special new things that COVID has kind of taught me that I'm taking into the future. What do you think is going to be different about how you move forward as a songwriter or as an artist?
I think that it's definitely given me a very deep gratitude and appreciation for live music again, like being able to perform live. You know, I just did a tour in December, man. And I mean, the week before we hit the road, we nearly canceled the whole thing because we thought it was going to be COVID. You know, it was like Omicron and everything was heating up. And eventually I just decided to take a risk and just get out on the road and see what happens. And it all worked out. The shows were amazing. Sold out.
You definitely chose the best variant for that. So good job.
Yeah. Listen, we tried to do a December tour this the year before, and we got canceled when we were on the road. And it was quite a knock, man. I mean, financially, and it was really, really frustrating. And I didn't want to be in that same situation, but, we gave it another shot and we went out and, yeah, we did like 15, 16 shows around the country, man. And every single show was either sold out or very close to sold out. And it was just wonderful. I just had this really new, like renewed sensitivity to how special the live music is, you know, how this beautiful, fleeting, temporary thing that we connect together with, and it starts and it ends, and we'll never be in that moment again, but in that moment it meant something. And I really got a huge amount of just positive energy, something that like really gave me inspiration, and something that I think I wouldn't have been as sensitized to if it wasn't for the lockdown.
Awesome. And I'm sure you must be sensing a different vibe from audiences as well. Just really relieved to be out the house.
Yeah, definitely, man. And I think that, you know, I think there's a newfound, well, not newfound, but I think it's just a renewed sort of pride in local music. You know, obviously, you know, it's interesting because there's very few international artists playing in around the world right now. So it's a lot of the local music, live at least, is being the only thing out there. And I think that people are kind of rediscovering their local artists and celebrating them in a way that maybe they hadn't before. Mm. So, yeah, it's like there's weird, you know, it's been a strange time, and there's always unexpected benefits and unexpected downsides as well. So it's, you know, you just have to adapt and change. And, you know, I've just been the real lockdown year was just for me locking myself in this specific in this actual room and just writing. I just sat and wrote a bunch of songs.
Favorite South African artist?
Oh, come on, man. No, man.
I'll give you two options. One, the person you like the most, and second of all, the artist you think is the most underrated.
So underrated.
Yeah.
Jeez, man. So like as in personally like mates.
There's no rules to the answer to this question. I was trying to make it easy for you, it could be mates. So that could be okay. The one angle. The other angle could be someone you think's really, really amazing, but it hasn't quite reached their full potential.
Okay, I think that the artist that I'm listening to, South African artist that I really love, is a lot more in the sort of like house, deep house kind of places, like an African, like there's some beautiful African music happening, man. I mean, I think Trezor is an amazing artist. I love his work. I love Sun L, musician.
You know, Trezor wrote and produced two songs on the new Drake album.
Yeah, yeah. I know that.
And you know, he's on the new Metallica, on the Metallica Black tribute album.
No, he's
that guy's killing it.
No, he's a legend, man. I remember when the day that the lockdown started, like in like 2020, like in March or whenever it started, like the first like major nightmare where they were starting to announce, I was in LA and Trezor was in New York. He had just arrived. And he messaged me and he's like, dude, I know you're overseas right now. What do you think of this like COVID thing? And I'm like, bro, I don't know. I think we're fine. I think this is just overblown. Like, this is just rubbish. And then like 2 days later, Ramposa like announced that the travel ban was happening. And I like just literally left studio and drove to the airport. Like, just got the next flight. And I remember messaging him and being like, bro, I'm at the airport. I'm about to go home. I think you should do the same. And he was like, nah, bro, I'm just going to see what happens. Like, I'm just going to try and hold out. And then, like, 2 days later, he was on a plane home. Like, I was just, like, whinging about it. And, yeah, so I think he's amazing. I love Sun L, musician. I think that
he is special, incredible. That guy. Sun L is something really special there.
Music, man. Beautiful spiritual music. I love Bongaziwe Mabandla. I think he's a really underrated, beautiful musician.
With him. I've done some music with him, and he is a being from another planet. I mean,
yeah, man, beautiful. Like I kind of grew up on that style of African music. It's very traditional. It's got this really beautiful traditional influence, and I love it, man.
That's a nice question.
For the first time. Okay. No, I spoke to him this week for the first time, and I want to do something with him. So
he is a lovely human being as well, just the sweetest guy ever. So what was your dad into that you have become to appreciate?
My dad is my favorite artist in South Africa, but I didn't want to.
Sorry. but what music?
That's the answer you're expecting.
I wasn't going there. I mean, I get that. But what music was he into that you've kind of come to appreciate? Because usually, I know when I was a kid, my dad used to play Willie Nelson and Johnny Cash, and I thought it was trash until I got much older, and I was like, this is the greatest shit ever.
Yeah, he listened to a lot of world music, African music from different parts of Africa. I remember. He loved Sting and the Police. He loved Peter Gabriel. He loved songwriters. He loved Bob Dylan and Leonard Cohen and those kinds of like really like lyricists, you know, like people who are politically and socially conscious, like really deep lyricists. Steely Span. He loved for like the Celtic vibe. It's amazing. He had such eclectic taste. You know, when I was in my teens, he introduced me to Nirvana, you know, and when by the time I was, you know, executive producing his last album, I mean, he was listening to like trap and hip hop and, you know, stuff that I was even like, damn, dad, like that's actually, that's pretty hardcore, man. Like, so he had very eclectic.
Cool.
Yeah, he had very eclectic taste, and he always had an ear for melody and just for great lyrics, you know, just like the universals of songwriting, no matter what genre, he just had a great ear for that.
Okay, so outside of South Africa, your like global favorite artists, what are you listening to when you're listening?
I mean, I don't know. Like, I think nowadays, man, it's become so strange. Like, you know, it's like I used to listen to like artists where like I listened to the whole album, track one, two, track 10, and I would study the album and like go down the rabbit hole, and now I'm like listening to singles, I guess, like, and some of the songs that I've loved the most have been artists that I've literally never heard of before, and I've only heard one song of the, you know, like, it's so strange now, man. It's like it's hard to know like what it's hard to know how to listen to music anymore. I mean, I think
that's good, that's a great Great point. I like that.
Yeah. I mean,
I feel the same way.
Yeah. I mean, I guess if there was one like great band that I think has come out of nowhere and is just like a really properly great band is, I think, Nothing But Thieves. Cool. Just in terms of like, he has a really good band that I think is going to last a long time, and they've written great songs. But yeah, man, I mean, I listen to everything. Eh? It's like, it's become so eclectic. Like I love just going down like weird playlist rabbit holes.
Are you able to listen to music? Like, you know, some people when they're writing, when they're in the writing phase, they don't want to take anything in. They're just focusing. And then other people just want to listen to everything and sort of be immersed in it. Which of those two schools are you?
I think when I'm writing, if I'm actually in a session, like if I'm actually writing, you know, a song for myself and I'm in a session, I don't want to listen to other music. Like, I think that you want to, you know, you don't want to start becoming, it's very hard to remove your ear from something that you've just heard. And you instinctively go into that world and it becomes a bit derivative. I think that if you walk in with a clean slate and you keep yourself stuck to that little world that you build, I just find like it's much easier to be like creative and original than if you constantly referencing songs. You know, like there's some guys like to have like a listening session where you reference things first. For me, it's like, I think that
poisons just, the well.
Yeah, for sure.
So then what music do you find really inspires you then? Like,
I don't know, man. I can tell you what I've been listening to. I just have to look on my phone. I don't know. This is in the last few weeks. I mean, it's really diverse, man. From Travis Scott to Bobby McFerrin to Run the Jewels, Manchester Orchestra, Royal Blood.
Somebody just introduced me to a band. What was it? It's called Red Right Hand. Is that right? That it's like the guy from the singer from Manchester Orchestra.
I don't know.
In another band. It was really interesting.
Oh, really? Okay. Dope. I must check that out. I love that guy. I actually saw them at Oppie Coppie. I played Oppie 1 year and they played and they were incredible.
Trying to find the name of this band. Sorry. Yeah, I don't remember them coming to Oppie Coppie. What year was that?
Yeah, they played at Oppie, man. I think it was the year that Deftones played.
Oh, yes. I think that. Oh, yes. Yeah. Well, that's something I miss is Oppie Coppie, man.
Hey?
I said that there's something I miss is Oppie Coppie.
Yeah, dude. Like, it was so funny. This last time that I went to LA, I went via. Where was I? It was like Florida or something. Oh, Cincinnati. And in Ohio. And I went to go see a friend's band, my friend Nicholas from the band Walk the Moon. And, you know, South Africa was in a major lockdown. I mean, I had to get permission to leave the country. And so I'd just been, you know, 3 weeks in like major lockdown, got on the plane, flew to Ohio, like went to this gig and it was like 10,000 people at a festival with no masks outdoors. And like, Jesus, dude, like the like shift in like my experience. First, I was super jet lagged and like just coming from like that kind of lockdown into this festival, I was just like, whoa, this is so amazing. It was like absolute euphoria, man. just like standing terrifying. Like side stage and watching like guys like packing the, you know, the mixing desk and plugging in cables again. I was like, wow, that's amazing. Like my heart is full.
That's cool.
Yeah, it was great, man. And just like seeing bands playing and like just the crowd and the vibe. Like, yeah, I definitely miss the festival thing.
But so I've got to ask you this. How the hell do you get a permission in the middle of lockdowns to fly to Ohio to go to a gig? What little fibs did you have to tell?
There is a process that you can go down, which I found out from the embassy, the American embassy, where you can get a exemption, a national interest exemption. It's called an NIE, And you have to write a motivating letter to explain why your trip to America is within the national interest. And I wrote this letter, man. I wrote this epic letter. I was saying I'm a South African artist. I'm going to go and collaborate with American artists. And, you know, this is important for cultural crossover and for artistic connections across the world. And I wrote this epic letter and I sent it. And I didn't expect to be approved. And then I just heard that I'd been approved. So I managed to get on the next plane to America.
You are a bullshit artist extraordinaire.
It wasn't and, for the record. I didn't tell any lies.
Was the plane, how many people were on the plane? Was it empty?
It was absolutely empty. I mean, I was flying from a banned country. South Africa was banned, remember? Like, we were literally on the red list. So the only people that were on the plane were Americans flying home, and there was probably about 20 people on the flight.
And just give me some context of where in the last 2 years this roughly was happening.
It was last year in August.
Okay, so like pretty, that's amazing. Well done on that.
Yeah, it was dope, man. It was great. I was there for 2 months, did a lot of writing. I shot a music video. Wrote a bunch of songs. Had a good trip, man. Went to go see some live music. It was epic.
Earlier on, you were saying you worked with Denim. What was that like? I mean, Denim is a very interesting and cool cat, and his career path has been really special.
Yeah,
are you mates with him in general?
Yeah, big time, man. Denim is a brother of mine, and
he's a wonderful human, that guy.
Yeah, he's a good friend. We've had a long musical journey together, man. We obviously Denim is the bass player of Just Ginger, and he's now branched off to become a very established producer.
Because he did Prime Circle as well, hey.
He did Prime Circle. He was the producer on my dad's last album. And so what happened was after the Toronto experience, I really wanted to record in South Africa again, my next album. I felt like I wanted to have a little bit more a collaborative and hands-on approach to the production. And Denim had just done Prime. And I did a tour with Prime Circle where they were doing their album launch and I was opening for their shows. We did like, I think it was like 5 or 10 shows around the country. And Denim was on the tour and we just ended up chatting and listening to music together and hanging out in hotels and partying and stuff. And then I said, you know, dude, I'm looking to do my next album and I'd love to just fool around with you in studio and see if it's a good vibe, you know. And we got together and I immediately felt that there was a great chemistry. And I ended up doing that album with Denim and Earvolt from Monarch. I don't know if you remember Monarch.
Yeah, man. I love great Monarch. Band.
Incredible band. And Earvolt was the guitarist and producer of Monarch. So me and Denim and Earvolt did that whole album in Potch, bro.
that's basically three producers in one band.
Yeah, no, it was like a dream team, bro. And like sitting in Potch with nothing else to do but like make music and brandy and coke.
What do you think is Denim's secret sauce? What makes him a special producer?
I think Denim's he's got a very sensitive connection to the artist. I think he wants to nail it for the artist. You know, I think he listens to what you say and he gives you the benefit of the doubt and he gives you the time to find, because a lot of the time when you're making something or you're producing it, there's a lot of searching happening. You know, you often walk into an album without a clear picture. You just, it's a feeling and it's a moment and you get glimpses of it in the demos, but you know that there's like a direction, a general direction, and that exploration is such a wonderful experience when you're with people you trust. And Denim is someone I really trust. Subsequently doing the album with my dad, where basically it was me, Denim, and my dad in studio for 6 months, you know, and really a wonderful, again, beautiful process of exploration. You know, my dad wanted to, you know, it was his final album. He wanted to explore his own sound. We wanted to do things that he'd never done before. We wanted to make him excited and throw him into new musical places and introduce some new production that, you know, that technology offers now that maybe he hadn't played with. And it was just such a wonderful thing. It was such an emotional, personal, like deep experience. And so those are just things that me and Denim have shared that, you know, for me, like those are lifelong memories that I will always treasure. And so for me, he's just a brother, and no matter what, you know.
That's awesome. Okay, outside of music, what are your hobbies? What are the embarrassing things you like to do, or not embarrassing, that don't have to be?
I don't know, man. I mean, outside of music,
magic.
Hey,
to do magic.
I don't do magic. I play squash. I, you know, watch TV and movies and play video games and do all the usual stuff, man.
Have you watched The Tinder Swindler?
I haven't watched that yet,
bro. You have got to watch this thing.
Is it all right?
Have you heard about it?
Yeah, I've heard about it, dude. I saw a very funny South African parody of it, which was hilarious. I'll send it to you after this.
This is what, well, I don't want to give it away, but the thing that is amazing about it is, first of all, this dude's done like this crazy shit. He's like ripped off all these people. The thing is, at the end, they're like, listen, he's still doing it, by the way. And what has actually been hilarious is that
he hasn't been arrested.
He got like, this is kind of ruining it. Like, the shit that he does is next level. It's like the craziest con. And really, you feel sad for the many, many people and the balls on that guy. But he went to jail for like 3 months or something for some related crime. And he's out again and doing it. And what's happened is, this is the hilarious part and why the memes are coming up. He's on Instagram again. He's got a manager. He's negotiating a TV show, and he's gone back to doing this. So you will you'll watch this show. You'll be outraged by it. And then you can go and watch him, see that he's still doing it to people.
Oh my God, dude. Crazy. See, I can't handle that. That is too crazy. So is he just like hooking up with girls on Tinder and then like spinning them a crazy story and getting them to pay money into like...
Okay, I'm just going to, if anyone, spoiler alert, I'll just tell you that if you're not going to watch it, I don't know, I'll just tell you that.
I doubt it.
So he basically goes on Tinder, right? All his photos are him in his private jet. He
nice.
Says he'll like say, "Listen, I'd like to meet you. Let's go to the most expensive restaurant in the whole of Los Angeles. I'll meet you there. I've only got an hour because I've got to be in Prague this evening." Whatever. He'll go and he'll have dinner with them, wine and dine. The bill will be like $6,000. He'll buy the most expensive wine, chat him up, and then he'll say, "Listen, I've got to go. It's been really nice meeting you. Actually, do you want to come to like Prague with me?" And they're like, "Oh, no." And then he'd start up a WhatsApp love affair with them. And then he would say, "Listen, I'm in Switzerland. I miss you so much. I'll fly you over in my private jet." And so everything in his life is yachts, private jets, and million-dollar account stuff. These women by the dozen, they fall in love with him, and he's having these like amazing relationships with them, these emotional relationships as well. You know, flying all around the world, doing business for this. He's a billionaire's son, what a. But then at some point he'll say like, "Shit, I'm in big, my bodyguard's been attacked. We've been mugged, like we running for our lives." And all these women who care for him, they're like, "What the hell?" And he's like, "Listen, I need help. Can you lend me $5,000 because I need to get on a flight to this thing?" And they'll lend him $5,000. Then he said, "Listen, I need you to do this thing with your credit card." And these people who think that their boyfriend is in fear for their life will go get loans and stuff and like add $200,000 to this loan and then be bankrupt for life and still not pay it back. Multiply that. But what he was doing with that $200,000 was wining and dining the next girl and taking her on the private jet.
Oh my God.
It's like the greatest pyramid scheme ever. And then follow him on Instagram. It's hilarious.
God, that's crazy, bro. It literally is a pyramid scheme for dating.
It's incredible. Yeah.
God, shame, bro. Shame. That's terrible, bro. Like, I mean, a guy's just taking advantage of people.
There's people, man.
Insane.
Oh, here's a great... I was going to ask you a more lighthearted question, but I'm going to go here. Have you ever had a narcissist in your life? Or cross your path or interfere with your life?
Yeah, I guess I have. I mean, I've had some strange ex-girlfriends. And, you know, I think that when like in my case, I was young and didn't really understand the situation. And then you start to realize that this is the way this person works, and there's nothing that you can do that's going to change that. Like you're just a passenger. I felt it was pretty, someone that I had a relationship with that was pretty, quite a negative vibe. And I'm quite glad that I managed to see the truth as, you know, quite early on, because, I think that she's, nothing compared to this guy. This guy's on another level.
But I mean, there's a few guys in the music industry that are, you know, on the spectrum there. I suppose.
Yeah.
Can I suggest maybe because of your, the royalty that you come from, maybe you had a heads up, or at least you had a really good sense of people that you should stay away from and people that you shouldn't. Cause I think that's.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, I think that like I had a really good role model. I think, you know, my dad was never someone who kind of went down that road. He was never someone who valued fame and glamour and ego. You know, I think ego is the enemy in terms of creativity. And I think that was a very good grounding for me. And a lot of the you know, if I look at the music industry and I look at the bands that have come and gone over the years, it's always the guys who are just legends. They're just like good guys, and they're friendly, and they like want to hang out, and they're happy for you when things go well. And like, you know, those are the guys that really last, it seems. The guys that are just like too cool for school, and they're not interested, and they're just like in their own world. And it's just like, I haven't seen a lot of those guys go from strength to strength. You know, I think that the music is it's a small industry, man, and everyone knows each other. And I think that it's important to be respectful, man, and to be loving, and the friends that I have that are musicians are some of the loveliest people in my life, you know.
From a business perspective, what have you struggled with the most in the music industry?
Business perspective. I guess I don't think about it in those terms necessarily, but like, I think that for me, finding my place as an artist, finding my like identity, which links to everything, you know, which links to your music, links to how you sell yourself, how you brand yourself, and all that stuff. I guess, like, you know, I've always been someone who's, as I said, like much more of a songwriter than a performer. So it's taken me time to find my comfort in terms of performance. So I guess those are personal things, not really business related, but they affect your business. You know, when your business is your music and you're performing, then that's something that affects the way you present yourself. And I think I'm glad that I had to go through that stuff, because it's given me much more confidence. I think South Africa is a small industry. You know, you have to be consistent. You have to have stamina. You have to be respectful to your fans. I think that, you have to try and hold yourself up to a high standard. I think that there's ways that artists can lower their standards that can not be in service of their career or like their long term.
It's easy to get stuck in the bubble here. You know, you're doing all the right stuff, and you're moving globally, and you know, just being present to what's happening in the rest of the world reminds you how much work you've still got to do. Whereas, I must say as well, that's very insightful what you've said. For me, one of my biggest regrets, or I think really why cassette never lasted, was because, I mean, I don't think it's hard to say this out loud, but I've learned from it. I don't think we had, I'm trying to say it. I don't think we had respect for our local audience, because we were so like up our own asses. We were like, fuck, you know, we've got to think globally. We've got to tour globally. This market's so small. Fuck this market. And that was really a big mistake for us at the time. You know, we were also moving with the Parlatones, who had the exact opposite thing. They were all about the local audience, and they're using that to build a financial and a fan base so that they could tour overseas. We just were like touring overseas until we sort of had nothing there and nothing here. And I regret that. So I like what you're saying, and I respect what you're saying. It's
I think that it's easy to have regret or to see things clearly in retrospect. But I mean, I had the same thing, man. Like, you know, I look back on my career and I think I made a lot of mistakes. We all make mistakes. And it's hard to know what the right thing is when you're in it. You know, it's so chaotic, and it's so, especially when you're brand new and you don't know where how long it's going to go for and
And there's no blueprint.
No blueprint. Everyone is on their own mission. And everyone's also in competition with each other. So you can't get advice. And it's like, you know, unless you have someone who's older, who's not, you know, and it's hard to, it's very hard. And I think that now more than ever, bands are in this weird gray zone. You know, it's like, I don't even know how new artists really break anymore. Like, I don't know how that happens. It's just changed so much. And I don't see even artists in America are, you know, I've worked with and spoken to lots of established musicians over there, and they keep telling me that they don't know how the music industry works anymore. It's all TikTok, and you know, it's changing. It's changing so fast, and you know, some of the biggest, the most streamed music right now is these TikTok 1 minute things that, like, you know, you get like TikTok producers that just make little 1 minute songs that are just for TikTok, and they get 20 billion streams, and that's the most streamed music in the world right now. So it's changing, man. And, you know, I think that the one thing that I think has been a very good lesson for me is just to be consistent to yourself. You know, do what you feel is right and connect with the songs that you make. And as long as you're internally consistent in your own universe and you're holding yourself up to a high standard, and you have that stamina, you know, it really is a marathon. It's not a sprint, you know. My dad, his final album, it was his 24th album or 25th album.
That is, you know,
35 years. Yeah. And still writing and still loving it and still feeling totally connected, like a young boy, you know, unboxing his first guitar. Like, I still saw that energy and that excitement and that twinkle in his eye. And so for me, it's just such a beautiful message and a beautiful lesson.
Yeah, but his great thing was he did what he wanted. You know, he carved his own path despite – he also, in the same way that I can imagine a new artist saying, well, I don't know what to do with this TikTok.
Yeah.
There was nothing for what he was doing either. He had to blaze that trail by himself.
Exactly.
And also, you know, you don't know what's behind TikTok. So in 3 years' time, you won't even heard of TikTok. And you'll still be consistently writing. At the end of the day, songs are everything.
You can't try and ride the trends. You have to just do what you do. You know, that is such an important thing, is just to play to your own strength. Like, learn what your strengths are and just play to those strengths, man. Like, and the thing that was interesting for me when I started was, like, I would listen to all this, like, very alternative music. You know, I was like, when I was like growing up, I was like, you know, I had like Deftones and Tool and, like, you know, like really alternative music playing. But it wasn't what I wrote. It wasn't the music that I made. It wasn't my forte in terms of my musical world. And it was really frustrating for me initially. Like, I really wanted to make this really dark, alternative, weird music. And, you know, I dabbled in it, but eventually I just settled on the fact that, you know, this is my strength. This is what I do really well. Like, I have to play to my strengths. And I think that that's in any business. You have to identify what you bring to the party.
Amazing. What do you think of TikTok? Are you on it? Do you like it? Do you hate it?
I've joined TikTok. I have not actually done any posting on it.
I will be honest, bro. It's very cool. I'm not talking about as a creator. I'm saying, like, it's actually very, it's a cool thing to play around with. It really is special. It's something different.
Okay. Okay, well, that's good to hear, man. I didn't expect that. That's great. Well, like, I, I, I don't want to be like dancing in front of my phone and like.
No, okay. You know, this is TikTok for you. I went 6 minutes, so I'll be quick here. The TikTok thing is very interesting because what Spotify is to your listening habits, like Spotify learns what you like about the music without you knowing. It's like AI for listening, measuring the formats. TikTok does the same for content in a way that is crazy. Now, if you wanted to learn a language or study how to be an architect, you can use TikTok. And the more content you start sort of engaging with, it will find you a funnel of stuff and you'll be hooked. If you did comedy, but I mean, the problem, the negative is if you start, you know, all the porn actors on there and shit. So if you start going down some different rabbit holes and you start teaching TikTok that you like this kind of crazy shit, then you're done for. Like, it'll take you into a dark, dark hole. So it's not cool for kids. Everything is there. But if you actually just... like have a like engage with some good stuff on TikTok, it will change your world. It's not like what Insta Reels and YouTube are doing are nothing. Like when Spotify first started, it made Apple's algorithm seem ridiculous. Like Spotify learns what you love, and that's what TikTok's done. To me, that's really interesting.
Yeah, it's interesting. For me, I spend a lot of time on my phone, man. Like I really dislike how much time I spend looking at my screen, and I see TikTok as another opportunity to become even more addicted to social media.
There's no doubt.
And I think that, like, you know, there's something that freaks me out about, like, these algorithms that just, like, that just entice you with content, you know, often meaningless content, just to keep you glued to this thing. And it's just, it's directed towards outrage just the most like shocking or the most like gratuitous content. But I hear what you're saying. It's so powerful. And if you're a responsible user, it can actually be an incredible thing that expands your world and expands your knowledge base.
You can learn astronomy on TikTok, or you can learn
the porn rabbit hole. I agree. I'm like someone who I love, like, you know, I read a lot of politics and read a lot of science and technology and stuff. And I find, like, when I'm, you know, in like a negative headspace, I'm spending much more time staring at my screen, diving into these, you know, these doom scrolling rabbit holes where you're just sitting and looking. By the end of it, you don't even know what you're looking at anymore. Like, for me, like, the less of that I can expose myself to, the better at this point. Like, it's so difficult to like remove yourself. And like, it's funny, like I've just had a my first child, and like, I would rather she is an underage drinker than she gets involved in social media at a young, like, I think it is just pretty, I think it's pretty negative, man.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. So second last question. So you started answering it by squash, but what are the non computer and iPhone related things that you really enjoy doing?
Oh man, I guess, like, I play squash, I watch movies.
Are you good at squash?
I'm pretty good. Yeah, I'm pretty good. I've been playing for a long time, since my Vits days. I read. I don't know what else. I've got two cats. I love my cats. I play a lot of video games, PS4 and PC.
Are you a FIFA player by any chance? I'm looking for someone for a tournament, an exhibition match.
I'm not. I have got FIFA, but I'm not good enough to play in tournaments.
Okay. I'm looking for an exhibition match. It's two celebrities doing an exhibition match. Yeah.
Dude, if you ever do that with Rocket League, let me know.
I think we are doing so. I'll tell you about off air. Okay. Last question, and then I will let you go. Now that you get the vibe, I mean, this was also quite in its own little lane. Who do you think has a great story to tell? Who would you recommend? It can be anyone. They don't have to be well known. It could be your shoe shine around the corner. Who do you think has an amazing story to tell that you think I should have on What's Your Poison? Can be anyone.
Okay. Well, you should get Denim. I don't know if you've had him before, but
I've never had him. That's a really nice suggestion, actually.
Yeah, he's got an amazing story, and he's seen it all. So he would be a good one. He's a great musician as well.
Cool.
Get Bonga Ziwe on, man. Get Sun L.
I've had him.
Have you?
Bonga Ziwe is hilarious. I'll give you a fun fact about him that came out in the podcast that I asked him if he didn't. I asked him if he wasn't a musician, what was it that he'd like to do? And he was very shy, but he said, actually, he's always wanted to be a stand-up comedian. That's what he thinks his real calling is.
Great.
So sweet. He's lovely, that guy.
Sweetheart, man. Look, what a legend.
All right, I'll take that. So Denim, Sunil is a great one. I would love to have him on. Yeah. That's a good one as well.
Sunil would be great. I can suggest musicians. Trezor, dude, I mean, that guy's got an amazing story. He started out as a security guard.
I've had him on. So me and Trey are like very close friends. And his story is incredible. I mean, his story is
beautiful.
Unbelievable. Cool. Yeah. We'll think about it. Yeah. I just want to say, Jess, I've really always wanted to meet with you, and I'm really honored and glad you came on, and it's been amazing to get to know you a bit better. Conversation was quite random, but I like it that way. I felt like I got a nice sense of you. You rock solid. I love what you're doing musically. I've always been intrigued by how you move through the industry. From the first day that I saw you, I was like, this guy's doing his own thing. Very nice to see you continue doing all those great things, and lovely to have you on What's Your Poison. Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much, man. It's a pleasure to finally have a chat with you, and we should connect, man. Are you Joburg or Cape Town based?
Both. I live in Cape Town. Are you in Joburg?
I'm in Joburg, yeah.
I have a studio in Joburg, though. Okay. Amped Studios. I don't know if you know it, in Newtown.
No, I don't. I'll just come check it out.
Oh, it's beautiful. Beautiful studio. Okay. We got an SSL, bro.
Let's grab a drink. And it's just been an absolute pleasure, man. It's an honor, and I'm glad we finally managed to connect, man.
Me too. It's weird that we never have, and it's happened. So cheers to you.
Cheers, brother. Thank you.
Take care, my man.
All right, man.